Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery. We'll talk comics for the week, as well as whatever news is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And now, on with the show. Episode 294 of the Roguecast, recorded May 26, 2020. So we killed Nick. We're back with the Roguecast, sort of. This is our second go at this, so if we sound not quite as fresh as usual, it's because we just did like 5 minutes of this, and then this is not a weird thing where, like, I forgot to hit the record button or anything. We were recording, but we're doing a sort of a social distancing thing where Dave and I are, like, 6 feet apart in the office, but there's really not room in this office for us all to be 6 feet apart.
Yeah.
So we're like, okay, well, Nick will do a Google meeting. We'll Zoom. Nick will come in on his computer, and the three of us could talk. And we were into it, and I realized that Nick's voice was going to pick up on my microphone and have a weird echo, and in fact it did. And so we can't figure out a way to get Nick and Dave and I in the same podcast.
So we killed Nick. Or rather, we decided that that Randy and I will record it for now. We may bring him in later on in this episode if there's some stuff that we need to his input for. But yeah. Otherwise, we'll bring him in next episode, right. And maybe I'll sub out or whatever. Right. We'll tag team it.
We'll figure out how we're going to do this. But yeah, it's a little weird, but we want to at least give a podcast. The last time we did was May 1st.
Yeah. And now we're back to, there are new comics coming out, and we're catching up. There's, like, lots of news to catch up on.
Yeah. So we're gonna run through some news and stuff. First, we'll go quick rundown of the store news. Since, like, it has been a while. Things are changing every day in the COVID times.
I will say, what's been nice to see people kind of, that people have been coming back.
Yeah. So we are open now. We've been open for about a week and a half, I guess.
At this kind of level, yeah, maybe even 2 weeks.
Yeah, it might be 2 weeks. So we opened to a limited sort of like six people at a time. Everybody wears masks.
And when we first opened, it was just one person at a time.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's true. So yeah, during the course of all this, we were doing curbside delivery. Then we did a, you can come in and do personalized shopping. One person at a time. We'd keep the door locked. Nobody could just walk in. You had to like make an appointment.
Yes.
Or you had to come in like with a mask. Then we slowly scaled up. We did a week where it was like six people could come in.
Yep.
Everybody had to have masks. Everybody maintained distancing. That worked out okay. So we've expanded to like a 12-person at a time. You have to wear masks.
We'll probably hold it at that for a little bit.
And we'll probably stay there for a while. But we were not open on Sundays. We are now open on Sundays. We're doing a flat 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. standardized hours all week.
Yep. So it's actually fairly simple. And, you know, people have been calling up and just asking, you know, are we open? What are the hours? So that's all the big stuff.
Yeah. And then Dave put together an FAQ on the website and on the Facebooks that say frequently asked questions about, you know, are new comics coming in? Are new games coming in? What about Free Comic Book Day? What about organized play? All that stuff. So if you have questions like that, definitely check out the FAQ.
For sure.
And then worth noting that we are selling masks now from some local artists.
Yeah, they generally are using patterns that are like pop culturally themed. So you got Pokemon, Marvel, DC Heroes.
Harry Potter.
Yeah, Harry Potter. They're really cool. Like, I was going to get one, but my plan was like, I'll get it the next time I'm in. And then I came back and they were all sold out.
Yeah. So yeah, we were all sold out for a while. We got some kid sizes in, and then we've got some more coming in today and tomorrow. So we'll have restock. And yeah, it's been successful and people are getting masks. And it's cool.
Yeah. A case of, like, you know, like, nobody is, like, happy with the having to deal with all the stuff we're dealing with.
Right.
But compliments to everyone who's taking it in stride. We're all kind of doing our best. And some of those things like that are kind of working out nicely.
Yeah.
The geek community is adapting.
All right, let's jump over to the news.
Yep.
Like I said, we've got a bunch. So we trimmed it down to the cream of the crop. This is the most interesting geek news in the last 3 weeks.
Yeah, something like that.
And if you don't think it's the most interesting geek news, then you're wrong.
We polled all the geeks.
Yes, we polled all the geeks.
And this was the winners.
So Taika Waititi is going to write and direct a Star Wars movie.
That's pretty big.
It is pretty big, because in a lot of ways, it felt like the Return of Skywalker, the Rise of Skywalker,
yeah,
was sort of a capper on the Star Wars. Like, Solo didn't do well. There was a lot of backlash to Last Jedi, and it felt like maybe they were going to maybe put the whole thing on a shelf for a while. The one that Benioff and Weiss were doing seems to have gotten, like, at least put on hold.
And Rise of Skywalker, like, ostensibly the capper to the 9-episode kind of trilogy that began in 1977. That first trilogy, anyway.
Yep.
Now 3 trilogies.
Yep.
Was kind of a mixed bag, but everybody was liking Mandalorian.
Yeah, Mandalorian, it seemed like, oh, so, and Clone Wars.
And Clone Wars,
so it was like, oh, well, Star Wars is going to continue on in the TV vein.
Yeah.
And we do, in fact, have some Mandalorian Season 2 news. Lots of it. But Taika Waititi being announced as he's directing a Star Wars movie is like, oh, well, I guess they're not done with movies.
Right.
Although, who knows when this movie will happen or where movies will be in 2021 or 2022. it is a little weird. People are still announcing, like, yeah, this movie's going to happen. I'm like, is it?
Yeah, right. I would assume that any given date, any announcement you see at this point, is at least somewhat subject to change.
Yeah.
That said, Taika Waititi is a great find.
Yeah.
He voiced someone in... He voiced
IG-11.
IG-11. Did he have any creative say in those?
I don't think so, although I think he might have directed an episode. I
feel like he might have, too.
Like, maybe the finale, even? Like, he definitely directed an episode.
I think he did, and that sort of makes sense because his character was featured in the finale prominently.
Yeah.
And let's see, what else? He's like, people like Jojo Rabbit, people like Thor Ragnarok.
What We Do in the Shadows.
What We Do in Shadows. So his track record has been pretty good with the geek community. I wonder what he's going to do. Do we think it's going to be like Old Republic? Or?
I have no idea. And that's the thing, it's like, Waititi does different stuff, so who knows what he's going to do.
A Greedo tale.
I mean, a Bounty Hunter story wouldn't be the worst thing in the world.
No, but it's getting fairly covered by Mandalorian, so I kind of hope it's something else.
Yeah.
I hope it's a Tusken Raider story.
Yeah, the Tusken Raiders.
Actually, you can do some cool stuff with them.
You could.
But yeah, I think that's generally a positive announcement. I'm down with it.
Speaking of Mandalorian, there's been a ton of Mandalorian news, so I'm just going to run through it. Robert Rodriguez is going to direct some episodes. I don't know if that's good or bad. I like Robert Rodriguez as an action director.
A bit of a mixed bag overall. Like he's not like instant quality when you see his name on something. But he knows how to direct an action sequence. He's a lively director. Salma Hayek will be in it.
No, not Salma Hayek, but literally everyone else is in it. There's a bunch of casting announcements. So I'm going to run through.
Okay, who do we get?
Temuera Morrison is Boba Fett. That's the Jango Fett guy.
Right.
Katie Sackhoff reprising her animated role as Bo-Katan Kryze, the Mandalorian.
Yep, I don't know I haven't seen the animated character.
She's a big player she's like the sister of the Duchess and the Mandalorians from the Clone Wars era.
Okay, so she is a Mandalorian?
Yeah, she's a Mandalorian.
Okay.
But she's going to be like a higher up, probably getting a little older at this point, so that'll be interesting. They may get more into the Mandalorian culture and stuff, since the actual Mandalorian we saw was sort of like a cell of Mandalorians, not part of the big core.
Okay, interesting, yeah.
So we'll see. Michael Biehn is coming to play a bounty hunter, which is great.
That's awesome. Michael Biehn, a.k.a. Hicks from Terminator, a.k.a. Reese from Aliens.
Let's be honest. If you don't know who Michael Biehn is, no name we give you is going to clue you in.
He was an 80s guy, but he also got to be a great bad guy in Tombstone in the 90s.
True. Well, that's kind of 80s.
That's true. But anyway, I only mention it to say I'm excited to see him get another shot at being a bad guy.
Me too. And to see him...
Well, actually, I guess we don't know who'll be a bad guy.
Bounty Hunter might not be a bad guy, but an older Michael Biehn is interesting, too.
Yeah, for sure.
Then they cast Rosario Dawson as Ahsoka Tano. It's the first time seeing her in live action.
Yeah, that's crazy. Cool. That's a big step for that character.
Yeah. She got a huge send-off in Clone Wars recently. She's a big part of Rebels. Like, clearly Dave Filoni loves Ahsoka Tano, and he's one of the big guys on Mandalorian.
And I'll say this, although I believe, behind the scenes, Rosario Dawson, like many an actor, has a few skeletons in there.
Yeah.
But I've always liked her performances.
Yeah.
In general, I like the casting.
The last thing is Timothy Oliphant in an undisclosed role. We don't know.
So that's in Mandalorian?
Yeah.
And Timothy Oliphant would be best known for Justified
and Deadwood.
And Deadwood, yeah.
Santa Clarita Diet.
Yeah, you know what? When he was on Deadwood, and he was kind of this real straight arrow guy, and probably to some degree on Justified, which I've just seen bits and pieces of. He actually reminded me of like a 2000s version of Michael Biehn.
Yeah,
weirdly enough.
Yeah,
he kind of had that straight edge, but not like geeky. You know, he was like a cool straight edge.
Yeah.
So that's a cool bit of casting.
Yeah, I'm excited about that too. And then
go ahead.
Last bit of news is that we know it's scheduled for release in October.
Do we also know that we're getting Boba Fett at some point?
Well, we've got Boba Fett. Temuera Morrison is cast as Boba Fett.
Right.
And presumably he's the guy who shows up at the very end of Mandalorian.
Right. And we don't yet know, like, if they're going to do the thing, you know, which has been done in various comics and other things, which is simply, he survived the Sarlacc pit, yeah. which, in canon, is, like, the last time he's been seen, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So, the character's last canonical appearance for, as far as, like, his timeline goes, was filmed in 1983.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
That's crazy.
But anyway, I think that'll be cool. I honestly think that the various debates I've seen among friends as to whether Boba Fett is himself a Mandalorian or just killed a Mandalorian and took his armor and all that stuff.
Nobody knows.
They can tighten that up and take it however they want, and I would have faith in them to make pretty good decisions. Dave Filoni and the Mandalorian people, they're going to do a good job with it.
Yeah, I agree. And then other big news from the other side of the big space franchises. The Star Trek series starring Captain Pike has finally been ordered a series.
Yes, we've been on the tip of their tongue to announce it for like a year or something.
We've all wanted it since Discovery Season 2, when everybody just fell in love with his version of Pike and Rebecca Romijn's version of Number One and what's-his-name version of Spock.
Yeah, I suddenly can't say his name.
But like, basically it's like, I don't know what they'll probably just do a new original story set in the Star Wars. It's basically like the original series, but
they've said it's going to be more episodic, much like the original Star Trek.
Yeah.
Which weirdly, I think, makes it the first Star Trek in the kind of since Discovery launched and they've kind of been doing these new ones to kind of be trying that.
Yeah.
The only competition has honestly been the Orville, which does a very good job of doing these standalone episodes with a little bit of an arc in them.
Yeah.
But you know, they obviously are their own thing. It's comedic and it's also like not Star Trek.
Right.
It's just fake Star Trek. good for what it is, but I'm glad to see Star Trek trying to get back into that.
Yeah, I'm excited about this. I mean, just watching that cast is going to be great. Watching those production values.
Well, I was thinking about this and thinking that to some degree, this is one of the easier ones to be excited about for me because I've seen the test drive for it.
Yeah.
It was the whole last season of Discovery, and like he was a what's the actor? Anson Mount. Right?
Anson Mount, right, yeah.
Anson Mount is Pike.
Yeah.
He, like, stole every scene he was in.
Mm-hmm.
He had a natural charisma, the same way, you know, Shatner does, but a little different, too.
Yeah.
And I think he's going to be great.
Yeah, so. I agree. I'm super excited about it. Nicolas Cage.
I like where this is going.
Is going to star as Joe Exotic. In a scripted series from the guys who wrote American Vandal on Netflix. Did you ever watch American Vandal at all?
No, it sounded fun, but...
Do you know what it is?
This is the... Literally had to do with...
Hasan Minhaj? No, not... What's the name of the guy who's... Oh my god, I blanked the serial.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Why am I blanking
on the one who was the accused guy?
Yeah, I'm blanking on his name. I totally forgot.
I'm going to blank on it.
At any rate... Serial sort of introduced this sort of new true crime documentary type thing.
Yeah.
American Vandal spoofs it because it was about who was drawing dicks on cars in high school.
Right.
And it is a dead perfect parody. It is just, it looks and feels, it's got twists and turns just like Serial.
Yeah.
It was super fun. They did a second season of a different
story. And Serial was like a great, great podcast.
Oh, Serial's great. American Vandal spoofed it beautifully.
But perfectly right for spoofing.
The guys doing that, with that kind of pop culture plug-in and the ability to spoof something that's good and make it work, doing a riff on Tiger King, which was itself a phenomenon, with Nicolas Cage as Joe Exotic, like, that's... I can't wait. That's so much fun.
The stars have aligned on, like, trashy, kitschy culture.
Yeah, for sure.
One of those parts that Nicolas Cage weirdly has many parts he was born for.
He does. He was born for a lot of parts.
As strange as that seems.
Yeah.
He was definitely destined to play the guy in Raising Arizona. He was probably destined to play the National Treasure.
Yeah, Benjamin Franklin Gates. Only Nicolas Cage.
And now he's destined to play Joe Exotic.
Although, Dave, now I'm trying to think of like a Christopher Bale method acting Benjamin Franklin Gates.
there's another world where like Harvey Keitel, rather than being the cop chasing after him, was this super intense, dark, brooding National Treasure guy.
I'm just imagining Christian Bale taking like a year to teach history so that he could really get into the mind of Benjamin Franklin.
Reads the script and he's like, well, this is all made up bullshit.
This is all made up bullshit.
This is just a bunch of Illuminati crap. and then he goes off on a rant for somebody for an hour.
Yeah.
I still haven't seen Tiger King. I need to see that so that I can brace myself for will be Nicolas Cage's finest hour.
Oh, yeah. This was kind of weird and surprising. Ruby Rose has exited as Batwoman, and they're going to recast.
And that was a weird one because she seemed so ideal for the role.
She was great for it. And also, by all accounts, those CW contracts are pretty tight. Like, people sign up for, like, 5-year contracts. Mm-hmm. So something happened. I don't know if it was just, like, the workload was too much.
They've been a little bit... They've been tight-lipped about it.
Yeah.
Everybody... I think the big things people know are that at one point she did injure herself behind the scenes.
Yeah.
There's been... The show has been the topic of a lot of kind of obnoxious kind of alt-righty backlash.
Right.
You know, they just... The trolls turned out for it. And you know, you never know how much that gets to someone. Like, Maybe it got to her, or maybe it has nothing to do with that, and she's just like... I don't know if it was you or somebody else pointing out that she's done mostly movies and never had the particular grind of a TV show,
right,
which is its own special thing with you as the lead, especially.
Yeah.
And just maybe all these things might have combined, but for right now, we don't know.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And she's like, I just want to take a nap.
Here's the interesting thing. Much as I like Ruby Rose, I think she's been good in the role.
Yeah.
You can definitely recast it.
Yeah, it's kind of weird, but like, I guess hypothetically, like, I like Grant Gustin and what's his name was...
You think Grant Gustin should play Batwoman?
Yeah. Was fine as... Who's the guy who played Oliver Queen? That guy.
Stephen Amell.
But, I'm just trying to imagine. If they had both gone a first season and then had to recast in it, I like both of them in the roles that they picked, but they could have done it.
I think so, yeah.
Grant Gustin, I think, was the better find to replace, of the two.
Yeah.
But not irreplaceable.
Yeah, not as long as Ezra Miller is out there.
You know what? This is like, in comics, this is like changing artists.
Yeah.
There's just a slightly new look. Maybe the book got a reboot, and a little bit of a relaunch, and it was like, not a full reboot?
So the new Batwoman is going to have a lot of pouches and Rob Liefeld thighs.
Yes. Anyway, it's weird. I hope the show does well. I know a lot of people have been following it. I haven't been following any of the CW stuff regularly.
Yeah.
But by all accounts, like, and I've seen a few episodes of Batwoman, and it was good. But I just haven't kept up with.
Yeah.
So then I hope they find their feet.
Yeah, me too. Last bit of news.
What?
HBO Max made a big announcement.
Yeah.
HBO Max is trying real hard to move the needle. They launched this week or next, or they launched, I think, today, or maybe tomorrow as we're recording this. The people have been crying out. The people have demanded, by people on the internet trolls, that they release the Snyder Cut. And HBO Max has called out, sure, we'll make you a Snyder Cut. It doesn't exist yet. We're going to spend $30 million, but we're going to make it.
You know, the people who have been, like, I gather the trolls have been pretty obnoxious on this.
Really,
one.
Really awful. Like, we have a mutual friend on Facebook who has been harassed by these people all the time.
Yeah, that's pretty horrible.
Yeah.
But there's a part of me that on some level that's just like, I know the people who were disappointed in, Rise of Skywalker.
Yep.
That they've been looking at the behind-the-scenes thing that had the alternate script.
The one from Colin Trevorrow.
Yeah. And I was thinking, like, if that had been filmed or enough of it to stitch together, I know that there would be clamor for that, too. And people might even like it better. I don't think I want us to become, like, where we're always, like, placating the fanboys.
I think this is a really bad idea. Now, part of that is because I don't want to see any more Zack Snyder in the world ever.
Yeah.
But beyond the specifics of it, honestly, I don't care. Make a Snyder Cut. Make five Snyder Cuts. I'm not going to watch any of them.
Right. But you didn't particularly care for the Justice League as it was.
I didn't watch most of it. Yeah. I'm not. DC's lost me. But
you're going to see Wonder Woman.
I do think I want to see Wonder Woman 1984. Yes. Okay. But I feel like, unfortunately, this is a slippery slope. Like, there's all kinds of people calling for, and it's usually the same people. Like,
yeah.
Why don't we remake Last Jedi and Rise of Skywalker? And it's people on different sides. See, like, people who love Last Jedi were really mad at Rise of Skywalker. And I'm like, I don't want to get to the point where, I mean, remakes are bad enough because they're already remaking too much stuff. Don't start remaking things that are done.
You know, it's funny. My buddy Father, who I do the podcast with, nobody hates Batman versus Superman more than he does. It's like his least favorite movie.
Yeah.
Not a Zack Snyder fan.
Yeah.
But he was allowing, and in general, he's very much against that sort of the movement of these placating the fanboys.
Yeah. Yep.
But he's got some Sonic the Hedgehog nerd in him,
mm-hmm.
and was one of those where he was the beneficiary of them doing that because they did change the look, and almost everybody agreed that was for the best.
That was for the best, but that's when you really that was before the movie was released.
Yeah.
That's a special effects thing. That's a little different, although maybe that was the start of the slippery slope.
I mean, to be fair, I guess it wasn't so much creative differences as the fact that Zack Snyder's daughter died. That kind of changed the route of that movie, so it didn't have, like, exactly a natural progression.
Yeah. I don't know, this feels like good money after bad, but whatever.
It seems like it might have been more, like honestly, that the coronavirus craziness, the need to have creative offerings... during that, like, might have moved this forward where it wouldn't have in another time.
Yeah.
Like, if we weren't all sitting around not able to film new stuff, HBO Max would probably be looking at other options. But because that's something that's at least partially done or mostly done, that it was a relatively inexpensive way to get some content out there.
Right, right.
I'm not planning to watch it, but... I mean, I know there's some people who just want to... They just want to see it. They just want to enjoy it. They're just fans of his, like, 300 and Batman vs. Superman or whatever. I hope they get a movie that they like, unless they've been trolling and being a jackass about it, in which case, I hope they drop off a cliff. Very specifically. Like Toonses on the old SNL bit.
I like it.
What else we got?
All right, so... That's it for news. Let's take a quick break, and then we will come back to talk about comics. So, comics are back.
Comics are back. And it's like a slow rolling avalanche, and where the pebbles are gathering right now. So last week it started, and it was just a measly 25 books. Marvel.
And mostly DC.
Yeah. And there was some good stuff in there. I'm happy just to have anything.
I was happy to have Deceased Unkillables back.
Yeah. And there's some good graphic novels and stuff, too. This week, I think it's gone up to like 40 books.
Yeah, Image is back in, Marvel's back in, and it's still small. It's a lighter week.
Yeah, am I correct that one of the curiosities of, at least for a little bit, that Marvel will alternate comics one week, graphic novels the next?
That is correct. So this week they have comics, next week it'll only be graphic novels. Yep. Also, DC is doing a weird thing where they're available on Tuesdays now.
Yeah, it's a little bit complicated behind the scenes stuff. There are distribution changes and some weird little bit of weirdness. But the net effect is that DC will be released on Tuesday. We'll see if the other guys decide to do it at some point. It's kind of a pain in the butt for us.
It is, but you know, that's,
separating it out, it created some complications. But
there's lots of inside baseball to it. If you're really interested in it, talk to me at some point, and I'll be happy to tell you all my opinions and thoughts.
But the net effect for y'all is comics are back.
Yeah, and 2 days. So if you come on Tuesday and get DC, come in Wednesday and get everything else, or just come in Wednesday and get everything, whatever you prefer to do.
Now, the one side effect of this is that our current schedule of doing podcasts on Tuesdays is a little bit screwed up by this, because we haven't had the time to read much this week.
Right.
Because we literally had to just put those DC books out to sell. We can't kind of like... hoard them for a quick read for a few hours.
So yeah, we may have a little weirder comics for the next few weeks. And in fact, this week is going to be a little bit weirder, because while there are new comics, there haven't been for a while, and Dave and I both been reading other stuff. So real quick, just this week, there's like there's an Art of Junji Ito book I'm super excited about. There's Jeff Lemire's new book Family Tree comes out as a trade. There's a new story arc for Avengers. New issue of Suicide Squad.
I know that Nick liked. He snuck in a read of Marauders and really liked it.
Yeah.
Which shows that some of those X-Men books are going strong.
Yeah. So there's some stuff. We don't have any specifics on it. A lot of the Joe Hill books came in this week. The Hill House books.
Yep. Last week, a miniseries that was like a Clone Wars miniseries, kind of in that animated style, kicked off. So yeah, there's new stuff.
Yeah. But we want to talk about was stuff that we had been revisiting recently.
Kind of quarantine reads.
Yeah. So Dave, why don't you start? Because I know you just recently reread Green Lantern Rebirth.
Yeah, and this was prompted. Actually, this is DC getting me through social media kind of... I actually don't remember quite what it was. It was like just Green Lantern Day or some anniversary.
It's the 80th anniversary, yeah.
80th anniversary. DC posted this, just a cool image on their Facebook page and probably elsewhere that had all the maiden Green Lanterns standing in a cool pose. That's really about all there was to it, but the art was really nice. And it had me remembering how much I liked... there's a Green Lantern series coming up on HBO Max.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
I was thinking, you know what? I kind of wanted to revisit Green Lantern Rebirth, which I always think of as my favorite Green Lantern story. It's the one that brought Hal Jordan back after he'd kind of, you know, fallen into, what's that word, ignominy? In the 90s, and then died in sort of a last redemptive moment. Then he became the Spectre, which was kind of awkward. But along comes Geoff Johns, which with what I think is one of his the best things he's ever written, Green Lantern Rebirth, and has, over the course of six issues, brought Hal back, managed to use all of the lanterns in really cool ways, so that nobody get like dissed, but like everybody got their moment in the sun. Yeah. Kyle Rayner, Guy Gardner, Jon Stewart, Kilowog, and even the Spectre gets to kind of they remove him from the picture, but they remove him in kind of a cool way. So I guess when did this come out? This came out like mid 2000s.
Oh man, I don't remember.
It was like, I want to say like it started up in like 2003, 2004, something like that. This is the run that would lead into it.
2004.
2004. That sounds right.
2005. Yep.
So we're going on 16 years ago.
Yep.
This was the run that would end up setting the stage for the Sinestro Corps, the Blue Lanterns, the Orange Lanterns, the Red Lanterns, Indigo Tribe. All of those cool ideas, the mythology began building in this miniseries. Mm-hmm. And, I won't, like, rehash all of the events in it. Suffice to say that over the course of it, a mystery begins to unfold about... what is it? I'm trying to remember exactly what kicks it off. Hal is the Spectre in it.
Yeah.
But it's as if, like, some of the other lanterns are beginning to experience weird, like, almost moments of possession. And what we find out is, over the course of the storyline, is that the yellow impurity, the kind of slightly goofy Silver Age thing where they were rings never worked against yellow,
yeah,
is eventually revealed to have been because the Green Lantern's central power battery encapsulated this sort of primal evil force called Parallax.
That was such a good twist.
It was so good, and he looked great too.
Yeah, it's like, honestly, it's like
insectoid and monstrous.
One of the most impossible tasks was Hal Jordan had murdered, mass murdered the Green Lantern Corps, mm-hmm, and they wanted to make him so bad that Kyle was the Green Lantern for going forward. Like, they
did their work tarnishing it.
They really tarnished him. Kevin Dooley, the editor, is largely credited, or. We're not credited, but responsible
blamed,
for.
Yeah.
They had done it so effectively that it was like really hard to undo. And John's found a way to thread that needle of like undoing it without just unwriting all the stories, without punking out Kyle.
Yeah, Kyle would go on to play a major role in the sister book Green Lantern Corps. He and Guy Gardner were like the sort of the leads in that team book. Parallax would find out is like the source of the yellow impurity, and Parallax is like the embodiment of fear. And that's why, because he was trapped in the central power battery like eons ago, every lantern has this sliver of like Parallax percolating in their ring and connecting to him, and it's why they all have to overcome fear if they're going to make their ring work. That's why yellow is a problem for him. He managed to come up with this really cool mythology, and it makes sense because it's, you know, the same writer who would have then later go on to come up with the Blue Lantern Corps and all the other stuff. And in fact, there's some neat little seeds for it in this one. And there's just endless cool little moments in there. One of my favorites is when Jon Stewart picks up on, when Hal looks like he's going to return. And Batman is, like, very skeptical about it. And to some degree, I don't like my heroes to fight too much. But this is a time when Batman was certainly somewhat antagonistic, as he often is.
Well, and also, Hal had done a lot of bad things.
Right.
He had rebooted the entire
Being
universe.
Being skeptical is a reasonable, a reasonable thing around him. But they made out that Batman was always a little edgy around him. That's probably a bit of a retcon. But, and Jon Stewart says, you know, it's because you, Batman, like, everything you are is based around creating fear. And this is the one guy you could never intimidate, and he doesn't know fear.
It's great.
And I was like, man, that's a great bit. And there's a part in it where Batman is like, grabs Hal on the shoulder, and he does the, hey, I'm talking to you kind of thing. And Hal just turns around and lays him out flat with one punch. And Guy Gardner is like, after that, he's like, it was one punch!
There's so many... For all that, you and I have had issues with Johns, and he does the same thing that guys will like Busick and Wade, and some of these guys will occasionally do of
the architects kind of...
Too much insider and too much references can be hokey.
For sure.
But,
and if worrying too much about repairing every little continuity bit is risky.
But the John sprinkles them in here really well. The notion of, like, yeah, the Guy Gardner gets to see Batman get one punch by Green Lantern is such a nice, fun meta call out. Also, is this the one? Is there a sequence where Ali, of course, I'm gonna remember the Green Lantern Green Arrow moment?
Yep.
Ali uses the ring.
Yep.
And he talks about, like, that it's like pulling back a really heavy bow. That it's like what
basically,
it feels
he
like.
He said it felt like he hadn't slept in a week.
Yeah.
That it was like just utterly exhausting. He did, and when he did it, create a cool arrow that fired right into Sinestro's heart.
Yeah.
Which Sinestro survives it. I forget it. I think the idea is just that it wasn't super, like, solid. It was enough to hurt him and stop him for the moment, but it didn't kill him. And Kyle tells him that that's the level of exertion that they have to kind of deal with.
Right.
He actually says it in a way that I slightly didn't like. It was kind of like Wolverine in the X-Men movie. He literally says every time. I was talking about this with a friend the other day, and I was like, if he had kind of... Now, he was... Kyle was hurt at this point, too.
Yeah.
Maybe not super snarky. But if he had said, like, you know, we train so hard, we make it look good, or something like that, a little bit of bravado, I kind of would have liked it there, so I don't feel like they're, like, every time they make a hammer, they're like, oh my god, I'm dying!
Yeah.
Maybe they should just go in and add a little thought balloon all of them.
That's funny, because I've never read all the Sinestro Corps stuff, I don't think. I think I fell off the book before that. But having the DC app, and I'm kind of like, I have this in trade.
Yeah.
But I'm like, maybe it's time to go give a reread to Green Lantern.
I would recommend it. I had a great time, and like, it's one of those, like, I do almost always have some issues here and there with John's, and I have almost none with this one.
Right.
And I did actually, I had picked it up in the new trade paperback that we've got, which will probably be coming back in stock soon at the store, that collects, it's got, like, Rebirth, then, like, a Green Lantern Corps miniseries called Recharge that showed sort of, like, what they were doing with them afterwards. And then it has the first three issues of this ongoing series. And then the second trade paperback, which I also picked up, even though I had picked these up in previous forms, I kind of liked how they were collecting them now. It's just got, like, the next 12 issues of it in there.
Okay.
And then the third one, which is, I think, just about to hit, has Sinestro Corps stuff in it. And I think I'm going to kind of press on, because like you, I spot read some Sinestro Corps stuff, but I'd never read all of it. So I think I'm going to use this as a this kind of forward momentum to go ahead and kind of catch up on some of that stuff.
So I have mentioned the DC app. I'm a physical comics reader. I don't read a lot of stuff online, but I have the DC app.
Yep.
And I realized the other day, I was like, you know, I had my iPad, and I'm like, I never finished Tom Taylor's Injustice 2.
Right, and which is that set during the time period of the video game?
It's prior to the Injustice 2 video game.
Okay,
it's
a prequel
between
to
them, yeah. And I loved his Injustice, and I liked what I read of Injustice 2, but then it sort of fell off, and I got about, I would say, halfway through, and never got to finish it.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, well, let's see what's up. So all of it is on DC's app. It's all available in trades. It's 6 trades.
Mm-hmm.
So I went ahead and read all of it.
Yep.
And it's so good. Like, he goes through there, and not only is he doing the stuff of, like, a what happens in a world where Batman and Superman went to war, and Superman's been imprisoned, and Batman and the world is sort of shattered, and the superheroes had their big civil war, and had, like, the post-Civil War rebuilding of the DC Universe was really interesting. But also, there's a new threat in the form of what seems to be the Suicide Squad, but is rapidly revealed to be Ra's al Ghul, who is like, well, the world is dying, I need to kill a bunch of people to save the Earth.
It's always his thing.
So he's, like, got a Suicide Squad, and he's got some heroes on board with him, and Batman's gathering his team to deal with it. And it's really good. It's big world-building superhero stuff. It feels like the DC heroes, because Taylor's moment-to-moment writing is so good.
Yep.
And then
I have to quick ask, who are one or two of the heroes that side with Ra's al Ghul?
So Vixen.
Yep.
Animal Man.
Oh, interesting.
And,
people who might have a connection to
Poison Ivy.
Ecological stuff, yeah.
Yeah, it's all these people who are like, I mean, Animal Man sides, he's like, he tells the story, there's an issue where he tells the story of, like, yeah, I was tracking the last of these endangered rhinos, and I saw this guy kill it for fun. Like,
yeah.
And he's like, maybe humanity isn't so great.
Yeah.
And, it's interesting. There's some fun stuff. There's, like, Black Lightning has daughters. Black Canary and Green Arrow have a son out of all this. And Harley Quinn has a daughter. All there's one point where a race kidnaps all the kids, and so these people have to go in to his crazy Arctic lair and rescue the kids. But also, this goes in a weird cosmic direction because they get like Brainiac's coming in because he's the big bad of Injustice too. And they do this story that involves the Red Lanterns show up. They have an interesting origin for Dexstar, the Green Red Lantern cat.
Yep.
And they have a Red Lantern invasion of Oa.
Oh, man, that sounds cool.
Big cosmic epic stuff. And, yeah, it's like, it jumps around. It's basically like, hey, let's give Tom Taylor the keys to the DC Universe. Tom will do whatever big story he wants. Uh-huh. And he tells these really interesting stories. And it always makes me think, man, he did Deceased. So we've seen him do, like, alternate world stuff. But I'd love to see him do, like, a big crossover in the DC Universe with repercussions.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we talked about this being a bit like Civil War, the whole the Injustice material. Yeah. And I know that, like, the interesting thing is neither of us liked the original Civil War by Mark Miller, but did see that the Civil War II comic book, like, kind of took some of the concepts from that and did everything better, we thought.
Yeah.
So it's not like we're completely against some big dramatic stuff.
Right.
We just wanted to feel more true to the characters.
Exactly.
And again, the original Injustice premise, I don't think either of us were like, oh, we really want to see Superman and Batman fighting.
I definitely didn't want to see... I didn't want DC characters fighting in the Mortal Kombat engine. Like, I was like, they're not that interest,
but the game, so the game did it well, and then Tom Taylor did it even better when he kind of added to it in the comics.
Yeah.
So yeah, maybe that's the thing that they should try next, is like giving him an in-continuity kind of dramatic event to run.
I would love that. Right now he's doing Suicide Squad, which had an issue come out this week.
Yep.
Some big reveals in that. We'll see how that plays out. But yeah, I like this and I recommend it. I'm kind of going through the DC app. I also saw, we're going to talk about Stargirl a little bit later, and I think Johns' JSA is all on the DC app, and maybe even Starman. And
I know Starman is because I believe our staffer Anna has been reading it that way. And so this is funny, Randy, because we were without Nick today, and so you and I, as if to replace Nick, are getting into all this DC comics.
Damn it, Nick! Damn it, DC!
Even when he's not here, he's curses. Here. The Acolyte is here. But anyway, yeah, I've had a lot of fun kind of diving back into that.
Yeah.
And I'd like to read that Injustice stuff, too. I have a lot of the early Injustice stuff in trades, but I never got around to Injustice 2.
Yeah. All right, so that's it for comics for the week. And we'll be back in just a second to talk about some TV and movies and some other stuff we've been catching up on.
And maybe sneak Nick back in.
Okay, so one of the silver linings of quarantine time is we all have a lot more time to binge TV.
Yep.
And there's a show on CBS All Access that my friend Les was super into. I hadn't gotten into it yet because I'm not like a big I'm not a big procedural guy.
Nick was into this show.
And Nick was also into it.
I believe like when it first was coming out, I believe he probably talked about it in an episode.
So for whatever reason, it got on Dave's radar, and Dave watched it, and he talked it up. And that made me finally dive in, and I burned through it all.
And we should say the name of the show.
And that show is Evil on CBS All Access.
Yep.
Or CBS if you insist on watching old TV.
Yes. Actually, that was something I wasn't 100% sure on, is if it was just playing on CBS.
It is just on CBS, yeah.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
And like, if you were just to do, like, the shortest of pitches, it's kind of like an update on, like, an X-Files-type premise.
Yeah.
In which skepticism and belief kind of fight it out in kind of an eerie series that it's not like as like overtly scary as X-Files was,
right.
But when it's creepy, it's pretty creepy.
It is.
Like, I'd say it veers more towards creepy than scary.
So the premise is it features a lead investigator for the Catholic Church who is studying to be a priest.
Yep. Played by Luke Cage.
Played by Mike Coulter, a.k.a. Luke Cage.
Yep.
He has a sort of a tech specialist played by Asif Manvi from The Daily Show.
Yep, kind of guy who sets up videos for him, does audio recording,
and
knows all the stuff.
In the first episode, he brings on a therapist.
She's like a psychologist who consults for legal cases.
Yeah, and so she is looking for a new opportunity, and she's an atheist, and he brings her in as their psychology consultant.
Right, and initially it's kind of like it seems like it's for things like somewhat focused on like When the Catholic Church is considering doing an exorcism, they need need to go through some rigmarole to determine whether they feel it's authentic. They want to be careful and not step on legal toes if
right.
they put themselves at legal risk. And that's actually, I know that in real life there's actually some truth to that.
Yeah, there is, yeah.
Obviously the show is taking wild liberties, but there's some truth to that. And she gets brought into, they want a skeptical voice. They want somebody to talk them out of doing this, basically.
But she and the lead have great chemistry.
Mm-hmm. And what happens is, like, the show is not just about, by any means, about exorcisms. It comes up periodically, but there's, like, a demonic influence, I guess I would say. And especially the way it intersects kind of with modern culture and social media and stuff.
Yeah.
So social media, viral memes,
There's
augmented reality.
There's somebody making augmented reality goggles with like a horror element, and that gets to a sort of possession thing.
Yeah.
And then there's a like an Instagram influencer who has like a subsonic thing that's going on.
Yep.
There's an incel plot line that is interesting runs through.
Yeah, so the thing that kind of drew me in on the series, which initially, like, the first episode I watched, and I was like, this is a little bit lightweight.
Yeah.
I like it, but, like, I wasn't sure if it was going to, like, you know, like, it felt like it could have had some more consequences and been, like, a more prestige-y show, I guess.
Sure, yeah.
But the more I watched it, the more I kind of liked the balance that they found, where it is kind of like, in a way, an investigation of the week. But there's building plot lines, including a rival, legal consultant, I guess.
Leland,
played by, if you've seen him, he's been on a lot of shows at this point, but he was Ben on Lost.
Michael Emerson is his name.
Michael Emerson. And what was the other show? There's like Person of Interest. He always plays these characters that are somehow kind of slightly awkward and even soft-spoken, but somehow have this charisma and eerie vibe.
Yeah, he's basically like an evil consultant. He is actively trying to make the world worse.
Yeah, and like sometimes when he talks about it, it's actually pretty disturbing.
Yeah.
Because it almost sounds like the effects that actually you're simply are accomplished by immoral, like, lawyers and stuff like that.
Yeah.
It's just that he's doing it with a smile.
Yeah.
Like, he's into it. And he is very scary, and there's some great scenes with him. But there's also, like, unusual running elements. Like, she has a night terror kind of dream.
Yeah.
One of these seemingly hypnagogic hallucinations of a demon named George.
Yeah. This very boring name, and he talks like a regular person.
Yeah.
But he looks like this crazy burned demon guy.
Yeah, and he kind of, like, crawls up on her bed, and there's this disturbing sequence in the first episode where she's like, I know I'm dreaming, and you can't really hurt me. And he starts cutting her fingers off.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
But just to give you an example of how some of these plot lines play out, where they kind of cast doubt sometimes on whether you've seen what you think you've seen or the characters think they've seen. In the next episode, she catches her daughters. She's got several daughters, and they are watching like a YouTube series that it's definitely a creepy, almost Five Nights at Freddy's. You know, one of those things that's super scary to kids and would make parents think, like, should my kids be watching this? And there's a sort of a demonic type creature on it that looks a lot like George. And at this point, one of her daughters has said she saw him in a dream, too.
Mm-hmm.
And at first, you're like, oh, my God, it's for sure the same thing.
Yeah.
Demons are real and all of that. But then you're like, well, maybe not. Maybe the girl saw it on this. Maybe she somehow heard about it from her. But she's like, she doesn't remember ever seeing this YouTube show. The show likes to play with you, like, on that one. And like, make you ask some sort of deep questions sometimes. They even, like early on, she asks the... I feel like it's a good balance for both kind of believers and skeptics.
I agree. I think I was going to say, that's one of the things they do really well is that...
The skeptics are real smart.
The skeptics are smart. Atheism is presented as a rational choice, but they're also, like, they don't punk out the guy who's, like, training to be a priest. At one point, she talks to him because her daughter has, like, a congenital heart defect, and she's like, how can God have made this? And he doesn't have an answer for her, but he's like, he basically, you know, he has an answer for why he believes...
Right.
Just as she has an answer for why she doesn't. And neither one of them are played off as dumb or wrong or anything like that. I thought that was really well done.
And she once or twice asked him like things like, hey, do the church abuse scandals, like Catholic church abuse scandals, bother you? And he's like, yes, they do.
Yeah.
And the show is kind of up front of, oh, it's produced by Rockne S. O'Bannon, who writes some of the best episodes, who did Farscape and back in the 80s did Alien Nation.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's kind of has an interest, especially like Alien Nation and something else he wrote. I know he wrote some episodes for Twilight Zone in the 80s, including a few really good ones. I think he likes the point where like sort of social commentary does intersect with a thriller, yeah. you know, or a drama.
Well, it's interesting because he is part of the creative team, and he brings yeah. in sort of the weird and the genre stuff.
Yep.
And then the other ones are Michelle and Robert King, who do The Good Fight and The Good Wife.
Right.
And I think they bring a lot of the strength of the character work and the structure of that make it work.
I mean, this is a show where I actually like all the characters. Mm-hmm. Every one of them is great. The creepy bad guy is great. Her daughters are all they're a handful,
a believable handful of four girls. Yeah.
Four girls. Then there's like her. Is it her mom?
Her mom, played by Christine Lotti, who worked on The Good Wife, I think.
Yeah, who sometimes babysits for her kids. Kind of a bit of a cougar vibe off of her. And that leads to some its own interesting series of cases. She's a pretty believable character. What I found is like it was kind of a nice effortless watch for me.
It's also there's a nice mix of episodic stories and arc storytelling. Like that's one of the things X-Files kind of struggled with is that they would do stories where like the arc was too long or the story of the week didn't seem to matter. This one, I like every story, whether it's the story of the week or the arc story, always had my interest.
Yeah, and like some of the things, several of the things that had mysteries in it pays off in the final episode.
Yeah,
like several mysteries come together in that, so that you get a pretty satisfying season one finale. Even as there's one thing in it that made me go, "What the hell is that?"
I'm like, "Wait, I want to see season two." Like, and also the mixture. We draw the comparison to X-Files. And there is that, but X-Files was always sort of a more dour show and like a very self-serious. Right. Evil is a little, like you say, lighter.
Yeah, it actually has some fun sometimes, including a weird like viral jingle.
Yeah.
That's like, you know, the equivalent of like an earworm kind of YouTube video.
Yep.
But there's something more disturbing going on with it, but it got some comedic moments. Asif Manvi is so good in it.
Yeah.
He's a very kind of charismatic, but also tell it like it is, no bullshit kind of skeptic himself. Yeah. And sometimes he's like on, he gets on a show that's a hilarious spoof of a Ghost Hunters show.
Yeah.
And I've seen, by the way, spoofs of Ghost Hunters shows, and usually they don't have much to offer, but this one was fascinating.
Yeah.
I really liked the plot, the subplot with that, and it brought out some good character stuff for him.
And they do this, they have good characters, they have a sort of a light tone, but they can go to sort of darker places where you like, you buy into the horror. Like, if you're a person who doesn't like being scared, there's some scary, disturbing stuff in here.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
When they started doing augmented reality in that one episode, I was like, oh no, this is going to be some horrible Lawnmower Man shit.
Yeah.
And it ended up being one of the creepiest episodes for me.
Yeah.
There's multiple things in there that are kind of disturbing.
Okay, so let's jump off of Evil. Let's talk about another thing, Dave, you had watched, which I have not gotten around to yet. But you watched the Sam Raimi Western, Quick and the Dead.
Yeah, I'm only, I believe, 25 years late on it. The Quick and the Dead, cult Sam Raimi Western from 1995. The lead is Sharon Stone, who's a kind of mysterious gunslinger.
Mm-hmm.
And who shows up in this town called Redemption. This little small town lorded over by Gene Hackman, who kind of clearly runs the town, you know, almost like a crime boss.
Gene Hackman ran a lot of towns in the West.
Man, yeah.
Unforgiven. He's a little Bill in Unforgiven,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, he's scary. He's, I gotta admit, like, I ended up liking this movie a lot, even though I'd seen bits and pieces of it before, and it was, like, it kind of looked too hokey to me in a weird way.
Yeah.
Like, that's kind of what Sam Raimi does, but it didn't look great to me. When I actually watched it, I ended up liking it. That said, his character in this, while sinister, can't hold a candle to the creepiness of his brutal little Bill in Unforgiven.
Yeah, no, I assume that, yeah.
Basically, this town is like, I'm going to say it's like the Mortal Kombat or was it Enter the Dragon, which was like the source of all fighting contest movies. It's like that, but with an Old West shootouts. Once a year, they have these deadly shootouts, and there's some kind of tweaks to the rules as they go along. But the idea is they're literally like, you know, those, you know, like gunfighter drawdown contests in the middle of the street at certain hours of the day.
Uh-huh.
And they don't necessarily have to be fatal, but you know that you're running the risk of it when you go out there. And again, there's like some kind of rules that changes happen throughout. I don't want to say because I want you to see it, Randy.
Yeah.
And I think you'll enjoy it. Among the shooters, like the cast is crazy in it. Young Leonardo DiCaprio, right about the age he was, I think, when he did Romeo and Juliet, is like the kid, a boisterous, full of himself, kind of charismatic but egotistical young shooter. Russell Crowe plays a guy who's like seems like he was like a former like a priest, mm-hmm. Who's maybe got some mysterious background and doesn't want to participate but might be forced to participate. Keith David is a gunslinger in it, very kind of cool and pipe smoking in it.
Right.
What do you call it? The guy who played the Commissioner Gordon, I think, in the Batman 89 and those movies. I can't say that name. Pat? Is this Pat something? I can't quite say it. I think it is. He plays, like, the saloon keeper who's kind of at the heart of, like, he takes down, like, all the participants in the contest. And anyway, over the course of it, just like in any kind of fighting game or something like that, you will kind of motives for why people are in it will be revealed. Backstories kind of come out. If it were a fighting game and anyone could potentially win it, and imagine a cutscene for each one that would show their victory scene.
Right. Okay.
But of course, this gets brutal, more and more brutal as things go by. Anytime there's a gunfight, Sam Raimi does those crazy, wild, cockeyed angles.
I remember the trailer. It's almost like a bullet cam kind of thing, or
there's
something.
There's a bullet cam in there.
Yeah.
It's actually not quite as wild as I thought. Like as I remember,
okay.
It's not. I'm gonna say it's not quite as crazy as Evil Dead, but it also plays with the tropes. Like almost everything in it, in some ways, feels like a trope.
Yeah.
Even though a gunslinger contest, to the best of my knowledge, I can't think of any other movie that particularly does that.
That's new. That's new.
Shootouts are common, but not that particular angle.
Yeah, Mortal Kombat, but with guns. Yep.
This is not a deep movie. It is a very fun and very watchable movie.
Yeah.
I actually did, though, I rented it digitally, and I watched about 20 minutes, and I was like, well, I wasted a few bucks because it's. I always thought it didn't look great, and it's not great. But then something happened somewhere around there, 20, 30 minutes in, where I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. That's fun. And then by the end of it, I was like, oh, that was a really good time.
It won you over.
It won me over.
Okay.
So, yes, if you, like me, have not seen The Quick and the Dead in the 25 years since it's been out, I think it's a good kind of fun, slightly guilty pleasure-ish viewing. If you have watched it and you enjoyed it, I suggest you revisit it.
I saw the trailers for this in the theater and wanted to see it, never got around to it. And this has made me want to put it on the list and catch up. So at some point I have to see it because I never saw it.
Cool. We'll have a little follow up on it then.
And I want to talk about a thing I discovered and became addicted to, which I never expected, which is the Magic the Gathering Arena.
The digital component for Magic the Gathering, the card game.
So I don't really play Magic. I played it when it very first came out. I played for the first, like,
early 90s.
Five or six sets. Yeah. Mid to late 90s.
Okay.
And it's one of our big sellers, one of our organized play things we did really well with, you know, when there was organized play before the plague took us all.
Right.
But Wizards of the Coast has been super supportive of us. So they do a remote play arena every Friday night. We get codes to give out for bonus things.
Yep.
They offered a ton of extra, like, digital goodies and limited cards and stuff for the recent release of Ikoria.
Came through for retailers
during
COVID.
So I'm feeling very warm toward Wizards of the Coast. And Magic the Gathering Arena, they're free, like, free to play online on your PC, has been on advertising on my Facebook feed forever.
Yeah.
And I see it, and the ads are good. These guys are good at what they do, like,
yeah,
their
man.
Trailers and stuff.
Lately, I found myself sharing their ads just because I thought they were witty and clever. And, of course, everybody knows that the art on their cards is fantastic.
Well, and because of Anna, we know more than we ever knew about this game. Like,
that's
she
true.
Tells us about the story. And
Anna knows stuff about Magic.
So, finally, even though I was like, well, if they ever put it on an iPad, I'll play it, 'cause it's where I tend to play my games. And I was like, finally, I broke recently and got Steam so that I could get a cheap copy of Scythe,
mm-hmm.
and then I got a friend's code for Settlers of Catan, and then I got some of the Jackbox games. I'm like, well, I guess I'm playing games on my PC again. I might as well download this free Magic the Gathering Arena thing. So I downloaded it, and I played it, and man, this thing is slick. Like, it's got sound effects.
I watched it a little bit up at the store the other day, and I've never played Magic even once in my life. In fact, I studiously avoid it. Not because I don't think it's a good game. It's because I know it's a good game.
Yeah.
And that I don't want to, like, get sucked into one more thing. As I've mentioned probably occasionally here on this podcast, when I first started working at what was then Dragon's Lair, I was just there to do comics.
Yep.
I was just there to be comics. I didn't do board games. I didn't do role-playing games. Now I do all that stuff.
Yep.
It's a good thing I don't do role-playing games that have miniatures and stuff. Or I just lose all my money. And so that's why I avoided Magic. But yeah, I've been kind of tempted by Arena too.
It's super fun, and it's so you can play for free. Like, yep. You just get on, they give you five starter decks.
You go
decks.
And get your bearings.
You get the starter decks, you would get it when they do the starter decks in physical form as well.
Yep.
And then every time you do a match, you win one, it subs in some slightly better cards, you sort of build your deck. And then you can get sort of bonus cards just by playing every week.
Uh-huh.
There's also a way to buy cards.
Sure.
Every day there's a sale in the store. I've spent a total of $10.
Yep.
To play a bunch of, like, drafts of the new set. So you play a draft. You're playing against other people.
Yep. By the way, the new set is kind of a cool kaiju-themed,
yeah.
Like, fantasy kaiju. Like, think D&D, but with some big old kaiju monsters in it.
So the main thing is it does all the math for you. You can build decks in there, and it does auto-building enough land for you and that kind of thing. There's a lot of, like, computer assist, so that if you don't know Magic, it'll teach you a lot of the basics without even knowing that you're being taught.
Uh-huh.
It's very clever. It's very slick. And I have definitely been... It's become a daily habit for me to play a few games. Because if I play a few games and beat whatever the achievement is of the day, that's a clever thing, too. It's like, cast 30 black and red spells, and you get 50 experience toward the track. And if you get a level, you get a free pack of Ikoria to open.
Yeah.
And
Ikoria is that new set.
Yeah. And if you get a few levels, well, there's a pack from the previous set. And it's very, very slick and very good. The interesting thing is... as a retailer, you're like, well, I don't want Magic to be replaced by digital Magic. Like, I don't want people to play this and not paper Magic.
Right.
They're very different games. Like, the styles of the Magic, paper Magic, you get a lot more limited cards and foil cards, stuff like that. It's really hard to duplicate it online in an electronic format. And the electronic format does things differently. Like, I don't think I'll probably go back to paper Magic, but I'm enjoying Magic Arena. And I can see a lot of people who play paper Magic who aren't playing Arena. But also, there's crossover. Like, if you want to do both, there's definitely room to do both. And
Dan, who used to work at the store here, who I'm sure does in-person physical Magic, has been doing Arena in the downtime.
Yeah, especially right now. Like, it's hard to get together and play games.
Yep.
But the nice thing is, if you're buying the Magic stuff, there's little codes. Like, the pre-release packs that we have, which we still have some up for Ikoria,
you get
six boosters in there. You get two bonus boosters, because that's the prize support this time.
Yep.
And you get a little card that gets you six virtual boosters for Arena. So you kind of get best of both worlds while those are available, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome.
Yeah, and they're doing... If you have an interest in trying this out, download it on Friday. Go to our Facebook, and we're doing a Friday Night Magic Arena every Friday night. Basically, you come on, you post a screenshot of your screen showing that you're playing the Friday Night Magic.
And just a real baseline thing to show that you're playing it.
And we send you a code, and that code gets you different things. Usually it's like little virtual backings for your game, like a little card sleeve thing.
Yeah. Cool little in-game spruce it up stuff, but it is kind of cool because you can be flashy.
Yeah, it's neat. And so that stuff's still going on. That's going to be going on for a while. I just got the confirmation that's going to go into June at least. So.
Okay.
It's definitely recommended. I would recommend people give it a shot.
Yep. And we do have Ikoria physical stuff in there.
Yep.
Seems like the set's overall going over well with people. We actually initially blew out of it.
Yeah.
Instantly, and we were like, oh no, we're not going to be able to get this back in. But we were able to turn up some more booster boxes. But like some of the challenge decks, is that what it is? Like,
yeah.
A few of those things are selling down a little bit low.
Commander decks.
Or commander decks, and may not be back in for a little while. So this is not a bad time to come try out some physical ones, too, if that's your thing.
Yep. All right, so that'll take us to topics. We're going to bring Nick back in from the dead, and I'm going to talk a few things with him. So I killed Dave, and I brought in Nick.
Am I Dave wearing a Nick suit? Or am I don't know where we are in this kind of technology at this point.
I guess that's possible.
I don't know.
I haven't even thought about it. But you and I have watched a few things that Dave is not, or
that's
Dave
true.
Is not as enthused for. And so we thought we would talk some stuff. First up is the new Stargirl on CW or the DC app.
Yes.
Turns out the DC app has, like, what? 8 more minutes or
something? Yeah, basically the DC app is airing uncut versions while the CW is having to cut down a few things here and there.
And I know what you're thinking, because this is the DC app, but it is not 8 minutes of her saying fuck.
No, this is weirdly one of the most in line with what CW does.
My friend Les likes to say it is a CW show with a DC app budget.
Yeah, that's true.
Because it feels like a CW show, but it has the cosmic rod effects and the stripe robot.
I mean,
and that kind of
the first episode sort of opens with a, I mean, their version of sort of an Avengers Endgame kind
the
of scenario.
Full on Justice Society falling at the hands of the Injustice Society. Like, Pat, the lead character played by Luke Wilson, pulls up in his hot rod to the mansion that is the Justice Society's headquarters.
Yep.
And it's on green fire because of Green Lantern.
Yep. The effects are really good.
Yeah.
You see snippets of all the villains, so you don't get to see them like full on, except for
Brainwave.
Brainwave
is for an icicle.
An icicle are the ones you sort of really see,
and
except
Grundy.
For Grundy. And Grundy is amazing.
Man, their Grundy is so cool.
I know. I'm wanting to see more of that.
Yeah.
Weirdly, I think you do see a snippet of like Sportsmaster.
So you see Sportsmaster and Tigress,
right?
And you also see. Turns out I have a friend of mine who knows Tigress.
Oh,
he's
very
a friend
cool.
In LA. He knows her. So you see Sportsmaster and Tigress briefly. You see the Gambler, although he shows up in the second episode.
Okay, neat.
And then there's the Wizard, or is it the Wizard? I don't know what his actual name is. The guy, it's not Sargon the Sorcerer. I'm not sure who it is.
Yeah,
someone
I forget
with the
my knowledge of like JSA, like actual JSA villains, is kind of light. Even though I do remember reading most of what Johns did on JSA.
Yeah. So there's one moment in the early fight where like a big shadow comes out and grabs somebody, and I don't know if that's the Wizard guy or if it's the Shade.
I hope it's the Shade.
Me too, because this has okay. So Geoff Johns is showrunner for this.
Yes, and he wrote the first episode, didn't he?
He did, and this is based on his Stars and Strike, which introduced Courtney Whitmore, who is a girl who gets the Cosmic Belt from Sylvester Pemberton, who was Skyman, aka Star Spangled Kid, and. She had her stepdad was Pat, the former Stripesy, who built this robot called Stripe. And then she was in this, it was a comic called Stars and Stripe. That's a lot of information.
It is.
Courtney, the most notable thing is Courtney is based on John's sister who died in a plane crash.
Yep.
And so this is very, very near and dear to his heart. Now, after all of this, John's became the go-to guy at DC and did JSA and did a legacy thing for JSA. Meanwhile, James Robinson did Starman and kind of brought the JSA back to prominence. And so this fuses all of that stuff along with some of the 80s, 70s Infinity Inc. stuff together in a sort of like the basic pitch is there was a superhero team called the Justice Society. They're gone. 10 years later, there are new people taking up the mantle.
Yeah. And the first episode just focuses on Courtney.
Yeah.
And introduces her and introduces the town.
Yeah. Blue Valley, Nebraska.
Blue Valley, Nebraska.
Which is now being run by the Injustice Society. They're like, they've got some weird like American Enterprise project.
It reminds me a little bit of what like Cobra did in G.I. Joe about Springfield.
Yeah.
And it's sort of kind of this nefarious tone to this town.
Did this feel like a weird like Robert Zemeckis 80s movie to you?
A little bit. It did have the flavor.
They've even got the 50s nostalgia, like he's got the 50s hot rod. And they go to this town, and it's like everyone's there's like there's cheerleaders and there's jocks in letter jackets harassing the nerds, and she is like in this idyllic Nebraska town, and she's an LA girl, and she's like she misses her friends.
It's like she's moves into Pleasantville, it's a little bit of culture shock for her.
Mm-hmm.
Her stepbrother kind of is assimilating a little easier.
He's a little douche,
but I mean. Okay, let's talk about
fun.
Let's talk about casting real quick.
Yeah.
I've never been a big Luke Wilson fan.
Oh, really?
I think he's just okay.
But he's great in Charlie's Angels.
He's good in Charlie's Angels. That's a very small role for him.
Yes, it's true.
Usually, when he has larger roles, I feel like it's just, it doesn't work.
Okay.
Except for Bottle Rocket, I liked him in Bottle Rocket.
Yeah.
Here, though, his charm mixed with that 1950s era kind of thing somehow really, really works. And I found myself kind of falling in love with Luke Wilson a little bit there.
Perfect.
Because Pat
needs to be a sort of wholesome, likable guy, but in a way that you could see where a teenage girl would absolutely hate him.
Yes.
And he pulls that off. Like, he is a sincere, nice guy, but at the same time, his sort of aggressive niceness is exactly the wrong thing for her, and it fits, and it doesn't make him a bad guy or her a bad person.
Right.
And here's the other thing. Let's talk about the girl playing Stargirl, because she could easily be so bratty you want to strangle her.
Yes.
But instead, you're like, no, she's got legit beefs. Like, they moved her across the country. By the way, Amy Smart is her mom.
Yeah.
Not a lot to do, but I love Amy Smart.
I do, too. Is she in a relation to Jean Smart? Is that her daughter? Or is
I'm
that...
not sure.
I'm not sure. I mean, I'm just guessing just based on last name, but I've always liked Amy Smart.
But the weirdest casting is the guy they cast as Starman. So Sylvester Pemberton was Star Spangled Kid.
Yes.
And Luke Wilson is Stripesy, his sidekick.
Yes.
Stars and Stripes. He became Starman, and he has this cosmic rod. And he's clearly very powerful, played by Joel McHale, which is weird and snarky. And the opening thing, the one thing that really falls flat in here is like his whole, when he's dying, the whole team's been taken out. It's very serious.
It's a 2 minute long joke.
And he's making fun of Pat, like, it's definitely, you can't do this. Don't. And I'm like, it's kind of funny, but it's so off. It doesn't fit.
It does. And I'm wondering if some writer was like, we have to throw this joke in, and we have to sort of do this.
Yeah.
And I think John's just kind of was like, okay.
My guess is they were probably like, we really need to hit, make sure people are asking, well, why doesn't this guy just take up the staff?
Yeah.
And they had to really hit that he was not the one.
And I guess I could see that joke working somehow.
Yeah.
Joel McHale doesn't work. And I love Joel McHale.
But Courtney finds the cosmic rod and discovers it works for her, and she's immediately taken with the idea, oh, Starman was my real dad, and that's why he abandoned us. And I don't think that's going to turn out to be the case.
I don't think that's the case. I actually like the fact that the rod has a sort of personality.
I was comparing it to like Doctor Strange's cloak or the carpet in Aladdin.
It's a little bit like that, but whereas Doctor Strange's cloak, it's a little humor. It doesn't really work with the Marvel Universe
because
it's never been a thing.
Yeah.
In DC, somehow that kind of dichotomy works.
It does. I think they've done a really nice job. Also, you haven't seen episode 2 yet?
I have not seen episode 2. I really want to. I'm actually going to...
Do you mind a minor spoiler?
No, I'm actually going to make Kaylee watch the first episode and see if she likes it.
Because I really enjoyed this. I thought it's super fun. The production values are great.
Yeah.
And then the second episode, they get a little more into the staff. She actually gets to use it. She builds her costume.
Oh, very cool. Yeah, because that first episode does not have her costume at all.
She just has the staff. And she's... But... Luke or Pat tells her, Sylvester didn't build the staff. It was built by a guy like named Ted Knight, but that's a little deeper story. And I'm like, oh yeah.
So we're going to go into
the
Knights.
We may get the Knight stuff, and we may get Jack Knight showing up and all that. So that made me super happy. Because that was one of my worries is like, oh, I'll be sad to lose all the Knight stuff. But no, that's in there.
Very cool.
And they are deep in JSA. Like, there's Dr. Midnight and Hourman, and we're going to get a new Dr. Midnight and Hourman.
Yeah.
They're going to be teenagers. And I really love the setup here. Like, episode 2 is just as strong.
Did they say which Hourman it is? Because there's been 3.
They do. It's Dr. McNider.
Okay. It's McNider is...
McNider's the first one.
Was he? I thought McNider was Night Owl.
No. Night Owl. No. Dr. Midnight.
Dr. Midnight.
Dr. Midnight.
Sorry.
Yeah.
I thought McNider was Dr. Midnight.
Oh, which Hourman it is?
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure it's Rex Tyler.
Okay.
The original Rex Tyler.
Okay.
But what's interesting is we've got these kids at their lunch table who have the names of the legacies. So Yolanda Montez is there to be Wildcat.
Yeah.
And Beth Chapel is there, and she's like a nerdy, maybe even on the spectrum girl.
Uh-huh.
And then there's a guy who's like a... you've met all these kids in the first episode.
Yeah, you meet all of them briefly.
And then like there's the sort of mopey guy who's clearly going to be their Hourman. I wonder if they're going to delve into the sort of notion of a drug giving you powers. It's interesting, and I know some people are going to bristle at this. Like, it is a very new take.
Yeah.
And they're definitely adding some diversity to it, but I actually love this idea.
I thought for pilots, just since I've seen the pilot, it was on par for me with, like, The Flash.
I agree. This was really good.
Because if you're comparing CW pilots, I think they all are okay.
Yeah.
Flash definitely excelled.
Yeah.
This one is neck and neck with it. It might even beat it overall.
Yeah, this was a great pilot. Also, Stripe, the robot.
Yeah, I only saw the briefest of glimpses.
So, the thing about Stripe is he was like a big, bulky robot. And I always thought it was an interesting visual, but I wasn't very taken with it. And when Courtney broke out of being just Stars and became Stargirl and got the cosmic rod and all that, Pat was kind of left in the dust.
It's true.
And that's probably fine. But I never really cared that much about Stripe. But Stripe the robot here is such a cool design. It's got that sort of 50s hot rod aesthetic to it.
It looked a little similar to what Johns did, like, in that Stars and Stripes, though, right? I mean, doesn't it have the same sort of aesthetic?
It's got a little bit of Iron Giant to it.
Okay.
When he does his boot jet stuff, it's really cool. He's got headlights on his chest. They're like hot rod headlights. And
I like that they're making Pat a kind of engineer slash auto mechanic, giving his own kind of place of business and things like that.
Yeah. It's really good. I was very, very taken with it.
Yeah, I was too.
All right, so let's move on and talk about Star Wars Clone Wars, because it has come to a finale for the third time.
I actually feel like this is
this
the
might
finale.
Finally be it. So this was three arcs. It was 12 episodes, three, yep. 4-episode arcs. The first one was the Bad Batch, all the clones, which I think we talked about a little bit.
We may have, but the Bad Batch was really fun.
Yeah, I like that.
I like that. And then the and that also dealt with Fives, right?
Fives, yeah, yeah.
And that was sort of the last of the kind of ARC troopers that Rex mm-hmm. dealt with. And, or not Rex, it was...
It is Rex,
yeah. Okay.
And then the second arc showed Ahsoka Tano, who had gotten sort of demoralized by the Clone Wars, had left the Jedi.
Yep.
And she's on the edge of the civilization dealing with these two girls, sisters, who have a smuggling operation.
Yeah.
And they get involved over their head with like spice smugglers, and Ahsoka is trying to hide that she's a Jedi. And it's a really good look at sort of like the criminal underbelly of the Clone Wars era.
Yeah, I wasn't quite sure where it was going at first, and then I'm like, yeah. Oh, okay. I mean, I'm sold on Ahsoka no matter what.
Yeah.
She's such a good character.
Yeah.
But yeah, I liked where it went ultimately, which is leading into Darth Maul and
these Darth Maul is the head of the Black Sun Syndicate.
Yep, it's leading into Darth Maul and Order 66.
Yeah, so the last four episodes are straight up like what Ahsoka was doing during Revenge of the Sith. And they change the title cards and everything. They make it one big... It's like basically a mini-movie of...
Yes.
Here's a side revenge. And they've always done better in the Clone Wars cartoons than they did in the movies.
Yeah.
So this felt like... This was like, oh, you're using the Sith stuff in Revenge of the Sith as a backdrop to tell this much more interesting story of Ahsoka and the Mandalorians going to take their planet back.
Yep.
And
so all
running
about
afoul
them,
of Darth Maul.
It's all them trying to... Ahsoka gets a mission from Anakin and Obi-Wan to capture Darth Maul.
Yeah.
And so she goes back to Mandalore to do that and also free Mandalore from his clutches.
Yep.
And then once that takes place,
Order 66 happens. And she's in the middle of it with Rex.
And I love the fact that this was a larger look at Order 66. Because in the movies, it's such a...
This is how it happens.
It's a punked out version of it where the Jedi are basically just shot in the back and that's it.
They get into the control chips. They get into the clones that have personalities and how they're sort of being tricked and brainwashed. Like, they have a chip that's making them buy these flimsy arguments, but they are still buying into the flimsy arguments. Oh, the Jedi turned on us and we have to kill them and it's our duty and it's too bad, but you know, it's what we do.
But we also get Rex, who sort of like breaks free from that. You get to love three droids for a few moments.
Wow, yeah. Those droids were from Clone Wars previously.
They were.
Yeah.
They've shown up here and there.
Also, I want to say they did some stuff with Ahsoka with the clone troopers that she gets that paint their helmets for her. That's really cool. So like it's like even a deeper betrayal. Like these people were her people.
Yeah, and then the last episode is just basically this long action sequence of Rex and Ahsoka trying to break out of a falling
Star Destroyer.
Is it a Star Destroyer? Is it
something like it?
Something
or
like it.
Republic cruiser.
Republic
basically,
cruiser falling into an orbit of a planet.
Yeah.
And it is one of the most badass action sequences that I've seen.
The action is so good. The bit where she rides a crashing ship down onto Mandalore in like the episode one or two.
My wife, who doesn't really care for... I mean, she likes Star Wars, but usually when I watch Star Wars cartoons, she kind of zones out. But she walked in and was like, oh, this is a lot of fun. Yeah. I'm like, yes.
And that duel between Darth Maul and Ahsoka up on the catwalk thing.
Yeah.
Like, they really... They gave a resolution to the clones and Maul that they did not get in the movies.
Yeah, Maul is a much deeper character than episode one made him out to
be. For sure.
I mean, Dave Filoni has definitely fleshed him out in a way that no one expected.
Yeah.
Which is really cool.
Yeah. This was totally great. A fantastic ending. And
honestly,
even if you've watched none of the Clone Wars, watch those last four.
Yeah, because the Clone Wars does a cool thing is in the fact that you don't have to have been watching it. You definitely gain a deeper understanding and kind of a love for the characters that you see because you've been with them for so long.
Yep.
But they also make it very entry level. You can just jump in and watch it.
Yeah,
whatever
yeah.
season, because it still makes sense.
Yeah, for sure. All right, let's talk about Never Have I Ever over on Netflix.
This was a lot of fun, and I wasn't expecting it.
Me neither. Mindy Kaling is very hit and miss with me.
I've liked most of
what she did. I didn't like Mindy Project.
Mindy Project was okay. I really liked the movie she did. Is it Late Night with Emma Thompson?
Yeah, I didn't see that one.
I liked that quite a bit. And then there was this one, which she...
So this, she just produces. She's not...
Did she write it?
I think she wrote some of it. She co-wrote. This is sort of the story of growing up Indian American in California.
Yep.
And it's loosely based on her life, but it's based on this girl, this teenage girl. She's like an A student, and she has a very traditional Indian mom. She's a musician, but basically her dad died in the middle of one of her music concerts a year ago.
You recognized her dad, right?
Oh, yeah, it's Mohinder from Heroes. And she had hysterical paralysis for like a year.
Yeah.
So like she spent her dad died, and then she was in a wheelchair, and she sort of fell in with the other weirdos of the school. And now this is the start of a new school year. Her paralysis went away.
Yep.
Because it was psychosomatic, and so she's in therapy over that stuff. But she's also like getting back into school, and she's going to get a boyfriend and all this other stuff. And
she definitely has sort of an agenda of what she wants to accomplish and what a guy that she wants to date and sleep with and sort of become the woman that she wants to be.
Yep.
And this is a story that doesn't quite go that way.
Yeah, there's she's a pair of really likable friends. Her mom's really entertaining. She has a cousin, an older cousin, who's like perfect and is studying to be a doctor, I think.
Yeah, as a doctor.
Oh, is she a doctor? Yeah, she's...
Yeah, she's in...
medical school.
Medical school, yes.
And she is being set up for mail order... arranged marriage. And she has a boyfriend. And they get into her character. They get into her mom's character.
Yeah.
She's dealing with loss of her husband. And we forgot. It's all narrated by John McEnroe.
For reasons that will become apparent. And I don't want to explain why.
No. But that is a weird touch that made me fall completely in love with it.
Yes.
It's so good. All the character stuff is good. It's really funny.
Yeah, I actually, it's touching. It's got a lot of heart to it, and that's sort of what kind of drove me into it.
Yeah.
It was funny, too, but I liked the characters, and I thought it was maybe not super realistic, but it felt more real than a lot of, like, teeny bopper shows will be.
I agree. I thought this was really, really good. It's one of the best things I've watched on TV this year. It's on Netflix.
Yep.
Over on Hulu, you just started or you finished The Great?
I am on episode 5.
Okay, so you're like halfway through.
Yeah, I'm halfway through The Great.
The Great, An Occasionally True Story.
An Occasionally True Story.
Which is a sort of weird dramedy about Catherine the Great and Peter the Not-So-Great.
Yeah, I just finished watching an episode entitled Moscow Mule where they create a Moscow Mule.
Yeah. It basically, as I understand from the people I watch with or talk to about it, it is loosely historically based.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of the characters are melanges of, like, 4 or 5 different people.
Yeah.
And it's about Catherine, a 19-year-old German girl who is brought over to marry the Emperor of Russia.
Yep.
Who is this... kind of privileged douchebag played by Nicholas Holt.
Yes, privileged douchebag is actually putting it lightly. I mean, I don't know exactly.
It's funny, he's not far apart from like Joffrey in Game of Thrones, but he's somehow likable even though he's terrible.
He's got more of a, I don't want to say heart than Joffrey did, but it was definitely, there's something.
He's not trying to be sadistic, he just kind of is.
Yes.
Yeah.
And randomly shooting things at like balls and just making people fight at random times.
Yeah.
There's
a lot of sex.
There is a lot of sex. But Nicholas Holt is amazing.
He's great.
I don't know why I would want to care for this person who's a douchebag. But he's fun.
So it's like, it's got the courtly intrigues of Russia. It's got... Catherine very quickly decides with her handmaid, who is a former royal... former member of the royal court who is now a servant.
Yes.
For reasons that will become clear later. You haven't seen that
episode. No, I haven't seen that episode.
When you see it, you're like, oh, that's why. her dad really screwed them over.
We've also... The church. And
right. There's a guy who's the church.
Yep.
And then there's the other people from the court. And so...
I'm surprised you're liking this as much as you are, because you don't like these periods.
I'm not a period piece guy. In fact, that's why I'm not as big into it as everybody else. But it's so well done.
It is.
That if anybody who likes that kind of stuff, you're going to love this. Unless you're a stickler for historical accuracy, in which case you're going to hate it.
Yeah.
But basically, Catherine decides very quickly, she's like, I'm going to kill Peter and take over the Russian Empire.
Yes. And I'm waiting to see how that plays out.
Yeah. It's super fun.
Because I like the people she's surrounding herself with.
Yeah.
The handmaiden, but there's also the sort of smart person of the court.
Yeah.
That she's kind of won over to her side a little, at least where I'm at. Mm-hmm. And then the lover that she has taken.
right.
that she actually has fallen in love with.
Right.
It's all pretty great.
It is. It's super fun, and it's a very unusual. And like I say, I'm not a period piece guy, so I wasn't as into this as most people have. But if you have any fonts for period pieces, it is a sort of bawdy, funny take on it.
Yes.
Last thing is a podcast that you and I have been listening to, which is Staying In with Emily and Kumail.
Yes.
It is Kumail Nanjiani and his wife Emily Gordon,
yep,
who did The Big Sick about their love story.
Yeah, and then they have an Apple TV show that they produce called Little America, which I watched a few episodes of this weekend, and I actually really enjoyed it as well. Okay. But yeah, the podcast, in these trying times of they like to call the weirds.
Yeah.
I was looking for a podcast that would kind of make me laugh. And yes, this is still sort of about what we do in COVID times.
Yeah.
But the way they look at it, not only because Kumail Nanjiani is a comedian first and an actor.
So is Emily. Emily,
she is, but she's also a psychologist as well.
Mm-hmm.
So you get sort of an interesting look at their relationship, how they're coping, and sort of their outlooks on
also,
things.
Also, she's immunocompromised.
Like, yes, she is.
She's in real danger in this.
Now, if you haven't seen The Big Sick...
see The Big Sick.
It's available on Amazon Prime for free. Go watch it.
It's so good.
It's so good.
But yeah, the two of them, they're like couple goals. They are great together. Yeah. They're funny. They tease each other. There's a lot of sort of running jokes. They bring in their famous friends and talk to them. Like, Kumail's co-star, the Lovebirds, Issa Rae. They did an episode with her.
Dave Chang.
Dave Chang, the chef.
Yep.
And they talk about sort of like, they're aware of their privilege. They're like, yeah, we're lucky to be, you know. But Kumail is talking about like, he was really excited to be in Inhumans, and now he has no idea when that's coming out.
Yeah, and then one of his movies just disappeared that he did. It's now out on Netflix, but he wasn't sure where that was going to go.
Yeah. But they also talk about sort of mundane stuff about like their cats and about how they're ordering in food and
how Emily destroyed a Nintendo Switch.
How Emily somehow drowned a Nintendo Switch. It's really fun and light and entertaining, and there's also some real thoughtful stuff they talk about. One of their running segments is like, "What weird thing made you cry this week?"
Exactly.
So it's a nice bit of lightness. It's a nice little we're all in this together kind of thing.
Yeah.
And all the money they're making from the ads, they're donating to like food banks and that kind of thing.
Yeah, it's a great cause. Yeah,
I definitely recommend it.
Yes.
All right. I think that's it for us this week. Dave is dead.
Yes. Or I might be wearing his suit.
Or Nick is wearing him like a skin suit.
That's true.
But he'll be back next week, I'm sure.
Yeah, maybe.
And I'll be back next week. And Nick will be back next week, maybe not at the same time. But until that time,
Yo, Joe!
Roguecast is a weekly podcast broadcast from Rogues Gallery Comics and Games in Round Rock, Texas. You can find us online on Facebook and at www.roguesgallerytx.com and email us comments or questions at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.